Okay, it is 9:03, and it is July 12th, 2018, and this is the discussion call, where you can express your views on any topic of your choice. NLA does not teach any topics here. It's an open forum, and the views expressed by the speakers here may or may not necessarily represent the views of the National Liberty Alliance. And we had a request from a gal that can't make it to the calls but listens to the recordings, and I think she left a message for Terry. And if Terry wants to identify her, she can. So, Terry, why don't you go ahead and bring up the question that was presented.
Less of a question, more of a statement. I asked her if she wanted
to... You're way down in volume. We need to get you up where we can hear you.
Is that better?
That's much better.
Okay. It's not necessarily a question. She did want to make a statement, though.
Okay.
Her name is Roseanne. She lives in Kansas, and at the end of this, I'll give her email out. She wants to thank the people in the discussion group, this call right here. She's had an... she feels that there's been ex parte hearings, and they make her believe, they're trying to make her believe that she's a real dreamer of some kind. And she feels isolated, and she doesn't have a computer. She uses the one at the library, so she listens to all these calls that recorded. She's had essentially no due process for a very long time, and she wants everybody on this call to know that what you say counts very much to her. And so she wanted you to hear that. And now I got to remember where I put her. I didn't write it down. That's terrible. I'm sorry. I'll get it here
learn.
In just a second. Yeah, one day.
Time. Yep.
Her email address is, I'll really do it phonetically, Romeo Mike Bravo Alpha Lima Alpha Uniform November at Juno.com. So that's RMBALAUN at Juno.com. And just, you know, say what you want. And she loves hearing the discussion here. So if you feel like you want to talk tonight, please do. And if you feel like you want to let her know that you want to say something to her, you now have a way to do it. So that was about all.
Okay. Well, it's nice to know somebody listens after the fact here, and that they appreciate people checking in and spending an hour with us on Thursday evenings in camaraderie, as we call it, right?
Yes.
Phone number ending 2224. Your mic is too close to your speakers, and we keep picking up stuff through you. If you'd mute yourself, there you backed off. Good. The recording will come out a lot better this way. So the floor is open, and you're all welcome to bring up your pet topic or anything at all. And remember, we're only here because this is your discussion, and if there's no discussion, we won't be here very long.
Hey, Jen, I can have some comments on due process.
Sure.
This is from the article I read by AP Napolitano.
Mm-hmm.
The article called Can Immigrants Can Be Deported Without Trial? And I read Napolitano, and I'm not agree with him all the time. However, as the former judge, I like his insight on things where we people of outside perceive. So he said in this article, there are three components of due process. First is the notice. The person against whom the government is proceeding is entitled to written statement specifically articulating his alleged wrongful behavior sufficiently prior to trial. Once notice is given, the government is hard-pressed to alter the charges. Second component of due process is requirement of the government to prove its charges against the person to whom it has given notice before a neutral judicial official, not one who works for the entity that is proceedings against him. So in other words, it's very hard to find some neutral judge today, but according to the judge, that's the requirement. Third component of due process requires this entire proceedings against the person be fair, that is appear to be fair, and that the outcome be rational. The judge can decide whom to believe, but he/she cannot, for example, decide that 2 + 2 = 22. And that would be irrational, and the fairness includes the right to appeal. That's according to the judge, and like I said, I am not the judge. If I support or not, this is not the issue. Issue is someone has, as Terry mentioned, he wants some advice because her due process was violated, so I yield.
Was that in reference to the deporting aliens?
The name of the article was "Can Immigrants Be Deported Without the Trial?"
Right.
And I make the statement to clarify that he said no, because the people wrote the Constitution, not the government, not the citizens. And if your foot is on this land, you are required to the due process regarding of your status as the legal or illegal immigrant.
Hmm. Okay. Who's next? James, New Mexico. We haven't heard from you in some time. Anybody at all? I see Robert posted a new picture on his Facebook page today. You might all want to take a look at.
And what was just said about the people writing the Constitution, and I know Terry's going to come unglued again, but the thing is, 1785 is, you know, states meant nobility, just by definition. So did the people really, do the people really have say-so in that Constitution, or is it just the, quote, nobility, which are now the global elites, you know, the progeny of them?
Nikki, go and prove it in the court. It's written, and the Constitution means what is written. If we start analyze every word, then we are lost for a long, long time.
I hear you, and I think that I have your email address. I will send you what I'm doing here locally.
I will appreciate it.
Okay. I yield.
I I may, because nobody is willing. I have this book called Citizen Rule Book. This is one of the constitution I have, and it's probably 20 years old. And this is from the Phoenix, Arizona, and the Bill of Rights, Jury Handbook, etc., etc. Interesting. This is very short. There is summary of the Communist Manifesto. Communist Manifesto represents my misguided philosophy, which teaches the citizens to give up their rights for sake of the common good. But it always ends in a police state. This is called preventive justice. Control is the key concept. Read carefully. First, abolition of private property. This is the Communist Manifesto. First 10 planks. Number 2, heavy progressive income tax. Number 3, abolition of all rights of inheritance. 4, confiscation of property of all immigrants and rebels. 5, central bank. 6, government control of communication and transportation. 7, government ownership of factories and agriculture. 8, government control of labor. 9, corporate farms, regional planning. Number 10, government control of education. 60, 70 years ago, number one threat to the United States of America was the communism. 70 years later, I would say between 50 and 100% of the first 10 planks of communists are over here. I yield.
Well,
I think you're right, Olinder.
Yep. If Hillary would have gotten in, we could find out pretty quickly.
Well, what about all those communist judges wearing the black robes?
Yep.
I was going to ask you guys, too, this is Jefferson in Missouri. I don't know if you've noticed this, but some of these sheriffs are wearing some pretty colorful things on their shirts these days. Four-star generals and all this medals. And have you noticed this? Anybody?
Yes, I have, but since the regulations controlling their uniform are probably written by the county and influenced by them, I'm not too worried about it. I don't like it, but I let them do what they want to do in that respect.
Right, I hear you. It's just another one of them, like the judge, for instance. I know for a fact that once this county gets back under common law, the magistrate will not be wearing a black robe. And the sheriff won't be wearing any stars on his shirt except his badge. Why I'm bringing it up is because the wordplay, that we know that's prevalent also is action. What's the sheriff's name in Wisconsin? David...
Clark,
okay, he's one of them. The other one's Israel in Florida. And the mouthpieces for the Texas, another one that wear these clown coats is what I call them. Anyways, it just goes along with the wordplay. They're playing disguises and they're being militarized by the government and all this. So be aware of these things because they may seem minute, but they're big. I yield.
Well, does anyone else have a comment?
Yeah, this is Winston from Tennessee. I got a comment I'd like to make.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, well, I'm looking back in history and looking at the birth certificate and the origination under Henry VIII back in the 1500s, all the way up to 1865. And that's one of the reasons why we had done left England in the 1600s, because of that birth certificate. And it was originated here in the United States in 1898 is when it first surfaced again. And that's how they done took us over. If you look at Henry VIII and Queen Elizabeth and what they did to the people and how they controlled the people with the birth certificate, it's exactly what they're doing here in the United States. I mean, exactly. What they did over from 1500 to the 1800s, they're doing again right here in the United States, starting in 1898. Everything that Terry had mentioned, they're all doing it. I mean, and it's all because of the birth certificate. The birth certificate is what gives them the right to do everything they do. That's where they took away our unalienable rights. So we got to get rid of that birth certificate and turn it back to the church the way it was originally intended. And it also ties into the property, into the land, and into the people in the work, and the sheriff and the magistrate. It all ties together. History. I was surprised when I saw that.
Yes, that is a control mechanism currently.
Well, we have a financial entity with the capitalization. We operate under the Uniform Commercial Code. So the Uniform Commercial Code is the law of the land, it's the law of the sea. The yellow fringe on the flag represents the Admiralty law, or martial law, whichever you want to interpret it as. So, I mean, it all points back to the bar. Like I say, we shadowed the government 16 years before the revolution. And I guess now that's what we're doing now, is we're shadowing the courts to take them over when we take control. Because when they had the Constitution and established the judicial system, we didn't have people in position to assume the stations, because the British Accreditation Registry was already there. And that's where the secret society is. And that's why we have so many lawyers in Washington and so many lawyers in Congress and so many lawyers in our state houses. I mean, it all makes sense. And they're just going to tax us to death, because when these people start retiring, they're going to make more money after they retire. I mean, tenfold after they retire. And the unions have tied all that to the taxpayer. And there's no way we can get around that no more. So either the pensions go bust or we go bust. I mean, that's how I see it. I yield.
Well, Veronica, it looked like you were going to jump in before on that one. Do you want to make a comment?
Shut everybody up.
No, I agree with you 100%. I agree with you 100%. I'm reading the coffers from the municipal corporation. Policemen, for his $1 contribution, we the people contribute four. For firemen, it's probably three. We contribute three and a half. For rest of them, I think it's like $1.50. So then comes the health tax, which every one of them, on average, getting from the people $10,000 each every year. That's why we are poor, and this gentleman from Missouri is absolutely correct.
This is Nikki. I think I might have muted myself as I was talking. I heard you, Jan. Is it okay if I talk?
Just this once.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, a frame of reference, okay? I'm going to, you know, spew out a frame of reference here, and that's the first paragraph of the Declaration of Independence. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to, and the primary purpose for that is to dissolve the political bands which connect them with another. Number two is to assume amongst the powers of the earth a separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle us. And the third part of that is a decent respect to the opinions of mankind, or for the opinions of mankind, is that we are to, what is the word? I don't know the correct word, but anyway, we are to, you know, say the words that for the reason why we're, you know, changing our status, I guess. What are the words? I'm sorry, but here's where I'm going with all that, is that from the beginning of time, all law is contractual. And I'm talking about recorded time scripture. You know, you have everything is yours. Just one stipulation to the contract. Don't eat of that tree. What do? They breach the contract. In taking that to the present day, and what the gentleman was saying, yes, everything, we're back into a condition of feudalism, basically, to the global elites. And Terry, I'm going to say it anyway. So. The thing is that because all law is contractual, when our ancestors, most of our ancestors came to this country, they bargained their full faith and credit. And in return of that bargain for their full faith and credit, they were to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, unbounded. Okay? Without political bans, because that's the way they had understood the Constitution and how things were here in this country when they came to this country, and they bargained for that, bargain meaning they contracted for that. In 1965, when the silver was taken out of the coin, specifically that particular thing that was done, that's like eating off of the tree, okay? So what they did is they took the silver out of the coin. Article 1, Section 10 was totally breached. Ex post facto laws, bills of attainder, you name it, pains and penalty if you do not do what you're, you know, under compliance to do. And that all goes to the 13th Amendment, because the 13th Amendment actually reads, there shall be no involuntary servitude, and then there's a comma, except as duly convicted of a crime in the United States to any place subject to their jurisdiction or its jurisdiction. And the fact is that it allows for voluntary servitude with which if you do not comply, you're going to be duly convicted of a crime. Because the second part of that 13th Amendment says Congress. Congress is nothing more than the reconstructed political bands, which were the Whigs and the Tories in 1776. It was the Sadducees and the Pharisees back in the first century. And today is the Democrats and the Republicans. So, you know, we come full circle. We have got to stop the chain and say, hey, look, you breach your contract. Our ancestors came here for them and their posterity, thinking that that Constitution was authored by them, basically, you know, because of the way we were duped into believing it. So here we are, it's the second, third, fourth generation Americans, and, you know, this realization is coming to the forefront, at least for me and what I'm dealing with here on my private side. So, you know, that's, anyway, I hope that helps, and with that I yield.
Nikki, we know the history, and we are overeducated, I would say. But we must go ahead. We have to change that somehow. I've been reading this article from John Rappaport lately, and there is a quote from the Mr. Number One Globalist, Zbigniew Brzezinski, And let me find it. That's what he said. Nation states, as the fundamental unit of man's organized life, has ceased to be the principal creative force. And listen now, international banks and multinational corporations are acting and planning in terms that are far in advance of political concepts of the nation states, that including the United States. Nobody give a damn what was in the past. There are new forces, and we looks like do not have a chance. And it's very few of us, and it's a very sad conclusion.
Do you yield? Yes. What I was going to say is the fact is that contract law, I mean, that is international law, is contract law, and so on and so forth. And when people raise their hand and say, oh, yeah, I'm a U.S. citizen, and then the 14th Amendment, if you're born to U.S. citizen, then, hey, or naturalized, then you cannot question the debt. It says right there in the 14th Amendment. I think it's the fourth section of the 14th Amendment. So that's all contract law. So actually, you know, when people go into court and they can't get any justice, well, look for the contract. They need to look for the contract. What is the contract? And is it still a valid contract, or was it breached by them and we're just too stupid to know, you know?
Well, I would say what the Brzezinski says, it's a little bit different. It's dictatorship. He don't care about the law, contracts, who is in the pictures, international banks and multinational corporation are acting and planning in terms that are far in advance of political concept of nation states, like the countries.
I hear you, and actually there was an article in a local newspaper here, and I posted it to SlideShare, SlideShare, all one word, .net, N-E-T, / NIKIHANNEVIG, and it is a handout that I've been passing out here locally. And in this local newspaper, in 1910, there was a Henry Clues that came into the area, talked to about 200 bankers in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and he said, if Congress passes a Central Bank Act, this is 1910 now, it wasn't passed until 1913, he said, the oligarchy, I forget how he uses some other words with it, but anyway, the oligarchy will become more powerful than government itself. He predicted that back in 1910, and I put it on a handout, and I've been passing it out to anybody who will take it up here. And it's on that slide share.
Yeah, the article of John Rappaport is on the very funny news. No more fake news. I never look at it, but I might.
May I?
Go ahead.
Well, wasn't it Amschel Rothschild that said, wait a minute. Any rate. Allow me to issue the money in a country, and I care not who makes the laws?
Yep.
Yes.
He sure did. And that's what happened. Yeah, I think it was Rothschild.
And if he'd have just finished the statement, apparently he dropped it there, but he could have went on to say that, and I care not who makes the laws because I'll own them.
That's right.
That's exactly the system we are in right now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the problem that what we might call we the people have is that we're the sadistic parasites that the banking, put their plan together behind the scenes, and we the people don't even know about it until it's already implemented and they have a full control over everything and have a lot of mercenary soldiers on their side called police. And so by the time we even find out about it, we aren't of the character to be able to, from my observation, to effectively organize against something of that magnitude. Because they have their own banking system, they have their own law. You know, I call them the bar mafia that are managing the whole society. And what we have is an honest way of looking at life. I think, you know, that's my point. All right, I yield. Oh,
hey,
if I may.
Go ahead.
When I hear people like, what's the name of the lady that's been talking? I've heard her voice on other calls. This is my first time on this call.
Nikki. Veronica. Some people call me Veronica. Nikki.
Okay, Vicky.
Nikki.
Do you know Santa Claus? I mean, have you ever heard of me? I'm known as Santa Claus on other calls.
No, I don't know you. I don't know you. No, not that I know of. I've heard your voice, but I don't know you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, have you ever heard of me before? I mean, if you were to see me, you'd know why Santa Claus. Kids, even today in the middle of summer, they see me in the grocery store, little kid, you know, 5-year-olds and like that, and they go, Santa Claus, Santa Claus.
Yeah, where's your red suit?
Yeah. Well, I've got one, but I'm not an advocate for Santa Claus. I won't get into the story, but I would never do it again. I played Santa Claus at a birthday party for a kid. And I just, when I first started getting on the calls, I just said, okay, call me Santa Claus. You know, my name's Jerry. And it stuck, of course, and so everybody called. But when you were speaking earlier about the contract with the original immigrants and like that, what my question is, they didn't seem to want to include the indigenous population in all of their wonderful thoughts about mankind. And that's not a very honest way of looking at things.
I hear you.
I yield.
Well, after the Civil War, the Sherman and Sheridan, the generals, they went on the west and killed all the buffalo. So those indigenous people die of starvation.
Well, I've seen on the History Channel when there's a program they have on that starts out telling about the Indians before the Spanish landed, okay? And they tell about how there could have been more indigenous Indians, what we call Indians, here. Like there was around 100 million of them in different tribes and things like that. They had towns set up, and of course they didn't have any, they weren't ignorant enough to build two-story buildings, you know. Then to go ahead and build 135-story buildings is ridiculous. But then by the time the Pilgrims landed, they figure at least 50, if not 90% of the indigenous population, all the way from the tip of Chile to the Eskimos, had perished from European disease, smallpox and things like that. So that when the Pilgrims landed, they found villages that were, nobody was there. because they had all died. No, they didn't know what happened, but they had all died of European diseases long before the Pilgrims had landed. So just a tidbit of information about the...
Yeah, but there's another aspect to that too. Is that you know, in Manhattan Island, there was a group of Indians that you know, sold out their own people for a wampum. You know, worth $24 when I went to school. So it and then the same thing happened in Nevada. There was an Indian tribe there that sold out the land to the settlers. So it kind of worked both ways, and it it's pretty sad, but it did.
Well,
I'm not saying what was done was right, you know, as far as the Trail of Tears and, you know, the diseases and everything else. I'm not condoning that. But what I'm saying is there's always someone with their hand out that, you know, is a taker, you know. Anyway,
yeah,
go ahead.
But it's my understanding that any of the Indians that made the deal didn't have the authority to do it.
Exactly.
They weren't... you've probably heard of, Jackson, Andrew Jackson, in the Trail of Tears. You mentioned it, but
mm-hmm.
It's my understanding the Supreme Court told him that the Cherokees took their treaty to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court come to the conclusion that the treaty, you know, that the Cherokee could stay where they were. And Andrew Jackson, from what I heard, made the comment, they've made their opinion, let them enforce it. So it didn't mean a rule of law or what, you know, didn't mean anything to him. Contract didn't mean anything to him.
Right. Yeah, and then there's that treaty, Hidalgo, the one with Mexico, that treaty, and the fellow who made that, and his, I should not have brought it up, the name is escaping me right now.
I don't know his name, but it was the Treaty of Guadalupe and Hidalgo.
Right, and the fellow who, Trisk, his name was Trisk, and he was told, he wasn't even part of the government at the time, and he made that treaty because he had a falling out with the president. I think it was Polk at the time. He had a falling out with the president, and he made the treaty anyway, and he wasn't tasked to do that. So, I mean, that's, you know, fraudulent on the get-go, too.
Let's go to the future,
I read about
Nikki,
the...
now. Nikki?
Go ahead. I'm sorry. What did you say?
And what would you check in your municipality? What is the requirement and qualification to be a city attorney? I'm going to read you what is in mine.
Go ahead.
Who shall be the lawyer admitted to practice in the state? That's it. Admitted to practice. We don't practice anymore. Nikki, we do this for real. So we are much better qualified than any of them.
Probably.
There's only one line. The city commission shall, by majority vote, appoint a city attorney who shall be the lawyer admitted to practice in the state. This is the vague, and this is not true, because they belong to the private association called Bar, which is their union, and then the Supreme Court of that state give them power, they give them certificate to work in the courts. There is no such a certificate outside the court. With one exception, the only the bar membership, which is the union. So this, the, nobody is admitted to practice. This line is it's not only vague, but it's also fraudulent.
Well, and another thing that's fraudulent about that is that they're getting paid with a foreign coin. You know, so we're actually an oppressed nation by, we're an occupied nation, actually, by definition of their own contract with us.
Well, definition of the dollar is certain amount of gold and certain amount of the silver. We have private Federal Reserve note and Donald Trump elected someone to the five people are elected by the president and seven by the members bank to the Reserve Board. His name is Goodfriend. This guy said that his policy will be if any one of us withdraw one Federal Reserve note, let's say the dollar, from the bank, we would be charged 10 cents. And then he is for abolishing all the cash, and he is the nominee to the I'm not exactly correct, my notes is our way, is the like the Federal Reserve Board. There is 12 members over there. So now you have it. You put the 10, you put the dollar in, you got only 90 cents, and pretty soon you're going to have the points. And that's the future. And those people are ruling. Those people are making the decisions today. Oh, Satchel people.
And we're paying them. And we're the creditors.
And we don't have, a remedy for that. That's exactly what's going on in our front of our noses. And we just repeat to each other the news. And we do not have the remedy.
All laws contractual. They have breached the contract with us. So, you know, it's far more than it appears to be.
Okay, I found it. This is my note. Trump federal nominee. This all again on the Luraco.com by Barry Dunnigan. Federal Reserve Board of Governors, Marvin Goodfriend. What a beautiful name, Goodfriend. Is that my friend? He advocates that the issuance of cash be taxed such that consumer only receive 90 cents when withdrawing a dollar. He also called for abolishing cash outright. Oh, my goodness. And this article was May 22nd, 2018.
Have you gone on to the Federal Reserve Board website? If you go, the Federal Reserve Board has got a website. And if you go on to that site, FRB, I believe it is, and and look up the cost of printing notes. You'll see that it's pennies on the dollar, and it has been that way since the Federal Reserve System came in. They only pay for the cost of printing. In 1994, I believe it was, somewhere around there, 94 to 96, somewhere in there, somebody had brought that to my attention, and I thought to myself, and it was they had given me a booklet from the Federal Reserve Bank out of Richmond, Virginia. And at that time, this is before they put all the fancy stuff in the notes, it was 3 cents to print a note of any denomination. And I looked at that, and I thought to myself, wait a minute. It cost them 3 cents to print that note. So for every $10 of my labor, somebody is pocketing $9.97. And I am being taxed 20% by the IRS on the full $10 note. That means for every $10 of my labor, I am indebted to someone for $11.97. Wait a minute. Something is wrong here. And then I realized when they took silver out of the coin, they owe us that amount because we are the creditors. Since the silver was taken out of the coin, that's what started me on this roll that I'm on. So, I'll get that website for you in just a second here.
Well, you don't have to, but I understand. I'm looking from the economical point of view, and this is it. People take the silver coins out of circulation for one and only one reason. They can melt it and sell it for more. So the government says, oh, gee, you know what, something wrong. So let's make something cheaper that it is worth exactly a nickel or 25 cents or even a penny. We did it to ourselves because we are smart.
Well, I just sent Jan the website, and is Federal Reserve... Let me get it up in something that I can read easier. Somebody's got something going. Okay, Federal Reserve, all one word, FEDERALRESERVE.gov/FAQS/currency. CURRENCY underscore 1271.htm. And you should come, you'll see that it is, when you look at this, you'll see that the cost of production for $1 and $2 notes is 5.6 cents now, okay, because of all the security things that they have in them. So next time you hear people saying, oh, yeah, raise the minimum wage, we're going to raise the minimum wage. That way you'll be able to work or this, that, and the other thing. And, have food on your table and for your family and all that. Well, who's really profiting? Is it the person that's still at minimum wage, or is it those people who are printing the notes and pocketing the 95 cents for every dollar extra that they're printing?
May I?
Sure.
Most of what we refer to as money nowadays is not monetized on paper or coin. It's a keystroke. Money. All it is computer generated money.
Sure, out of 55 Water Street in New York City, right?
Yeah, because it was like 1983 in a newspaper I was reading. They had an article of how much cash paper was in existence. And at that time, like 1983, they know exactly how much because it all has serial numbers on it, except some people light a cigar with a $10 bill, and so some has been destroyed. But for all practical purposes, it's pretty much exactly what they knew. And the paper reported that it was something less than 500 billion. Paper notes of all different denominations from 1 to 10,000. And at that time, only 500 billion paper notes were in existence. And they estimated that it could be as much as 50% of those were out of the country. So that would leave like 250 billion of cash in the entire country, United States. Meaning that if everybody in the state of California wanted cash for their their paycheck, I don't know, a week or 2 weeks, they wouldn't be able to do it because there wasn't that much cash in the to even exist it. Another thing, when they put the word dollar on a Federal Reserve note, it immediately makes it a fraud because it's not a dollar. It's not redeemable in a dollar, like the gentleman that I think might be running the call had stated. The original Coinage Act made a dollar of silver was 412 grains of 900 fine silver, and a dollar of gold was 25.8 grains of 900 fine gold. That's it. There's no dollars in papers, or no dollars of sand, no dollars of, you know, it's got to be gold or silver, and it's got to be of that weight and purity. So when the Federal Reserve, and you're saying this website you just told us about is a government website, .gov? Hello? Is anybody there?
Sorry about that. I live on a main street and there was cars going by. Okay, so yeah, the
it's a government website, even though the Federal Reserve is a private money system.
Well, you know, yes, but you know, government, it's their government, so they can call it anything they want. It's their government, right? So it says the Federal Reserve Board projects a likely demand for new currency and places an order with the Department of Treasury's Bureau of Engraving and Printing. It doesn't say the United States Department of Treasury, just the Department of Treasury's Bureau of Engraving and Printing, which produces U.S. currency and charges the board for the cost of production. It says it right there on the site. 5.6 cents per note for $1, $2, and the most expensive one is $100 note, and that is 13.2 cents. Okay, so next time, you know, think about every $100 of your labor, somebody is pocketing $99 and what is it, 80-some cents.
I wonder why it would cost more to put the same ink in everything except a different number in the corner.
Well, see, that's what... and the Federal Reserve Board back in, 1993, this booklet that I had was 1993 from the Richmond Bank. So back then, it wasn't as fancy. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. All right.
You know, a buddy of mine, what I was just thinking, his example, he said, let's say they need to print some more money, and, well, okay, let me say it like this. So when they get done printing this, even at, let's just say all of them were 10 cents on the piece of paper, when they get done printing it, they can just cut out enough of the of the fictitious money they just printed and pay for it with the money they just printed. Oh man, wow, what a scam.
But another thing too, we don't own, it's our names they want. Everything in cap. You know? It's they use a trustee in our names. And just like with our homes, anything, and it's funny because like anything with any bill that we receive, what do they write it in large caps? Legal things, that's like in our court documents. Everything is in caps, our names and stuff. And so I've been writing mine in small because I'm an executor. I'm a living being. And on there I noticed, too, where do you go and you find all the capital names, everything in caps? And they don't have to appear in court. And the attorney says, no, they don't have to appear, you know. It's a graveyard. All the stones are done in caps. So they treat us like we're dead. It's our names and our trustee money that they've been ripping us off on. I just found out, even like with, I was going over that YouTube with the Social Security, I was supposed to be receiving that. They've been ripping us off, my husband, for my widow's pension and all that. And I said, well, where is that money going? So it's going in a trustee. Everything we have, it's just like when the pension and stuff, when I found out that my husband's pension is on Wall Street under the former name because they merged all these names. And I said, we've been being ripped off left and right. I had gone into court today because they wanted to put me into strict foreclosure again. And I put mine in the appellate. So what happened, and I went in there, I bought, because they had a courtroom all by themselves for me to be there at 11 o'clock sharp. But I brought like 7-8 people with me. And so when I got up there, I said, I swear the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, the home of Jehovah God and Jesus Christ, and my prayer, His Holy Spirit. And then I proceeded, and then I said my name. And so she was, the attorney, she was the one, she was able to speak first. She goes, we are tired of her games. You know, she filed for bankruptcy. She, this has been going on for 4 years, 3 years and 8 months. And we don't want her to do no more motions. And we are trying, sick and tired of her games. And we want our money and we want to go into foreclosure and stop this appellate mess now. And we don't ever want her to file no more appeals or what have you. And so when it came to my turn to talk, I said, first of all, I said, I don't recall any of you paying 1 cent to my home. And I've owned my home for over 30-somewhat years. Secondly, I get a letter in the mail from you that you, your name, my mortgage and everything was changed, which that is illegal. I asked who signed my name. When did I take a mortgage with you? Show me the contract. I've given you letters, affidavits for proof of claim. You know, show me the contract. Till this day, you have not prevailed one shred of evidence. Secondly, I dare you to tell me I cannot put in a motion. That's against my civil rights and my constitutional rights. If I want to do it 1,000 times, there's nothing you can do about that. Thirdly, you are the debt collector, and you have been taking everybody's home. And I said, and my home has been paid for. You put my name all in caps, and as a matter of fact, I got every single document that you sent me. You sent me a document for the 3rd of July, which I just received it on the 9th, and you said that I'm into court, and I had to have this brief filed. So the judge said to me, well, you put a brief in, so we can accept that. I said, no, I put one brief in because I didn't realize that the appellate court extended it, but they're all working together because everybody else got 45 days, and they only gave me 14 days, you know. But I have my warranty deed. I have my quick claim deed. I have my life use on my property. I said, so I would like to know who on earth, when you tried to take my house, which is unconstitutional and it's illegal, and I have my warranty deed, quick claim, and life use, I said, who's going to sign my name off the deed? That's perpetrating a fraud. That's RICO. And all of a sudden he goes, I said, I would like this to continue and wait and so I can finish my papers with the appellate court. And I said, by the way, I would still like to see the proof of claim on all the letters I sent you. Show me the proof. Her face turned as red as a beet. He looked up at her as she looked up at him, and he saw the people that I guess he's had problems with, that he has taken their property. And this judge, he is retired. So I guess You know, so I got another call. So he put all that through, and he's making a motion and everything I asked to comply about. And I said, I personally would like for this case to be dismissed. I have been harassed repeatedly, and my constitutional rights have been violated. Oh, and I said, by the way, on June 18th, 2018, the Supreme Court put in motion any judge that does not sign off on any case, it is non and void. It's an illegal case. And I said, by the way, all my cases that you have sent me on for motions, what, nothing was ever signed off on or answered. And another thing I found out too, any foreclosure, you have 1 year and a half to complete that case, both sides to prove or non-prove. And the case is dismissed. My case has been going on for 4 years and, what did she say? 3 years and 8 months. So,
may I?
Go ahead.
I wish I had more information, but is anybody here on the calls on Colorado?
What happened? Fires you're talking about?
Yes, I'm in Colorado.
No, no. I'm calling tomorrow there'll be a call like this one. And a guy by the name of Kino, Steve Kino, will be keeping the board. And I just call them the Colorado calls because that's the Wednesday night call, of the, and that's a call I was on Wednesday. And they'll, I can give them anyway. They brought out that there's a judge in California prosecuting bankers for fraudulent lending.
Oh, do you have the number?
Say what?
Do you have the number we could call in on?
Yeah. Isn't that Bruce Doucette and the bunch that just got locked up not long ago?
That's their call.
Isn't that the same group?
Pardon?
Yeah, I'd advise staying away from those people.
Don't go to Val.
It's I guess they started it. I'm in Cincinnati, Ohio. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And Bruce Doucette, I think, started that call, but now a guy by the name of Steve Kino is keeping the call, and there's people from all over the country, like this one, I imagine, like I say, the first time. And
they're connected. Yeah, they're connected to Doucette. He's in prison, or was, unless he just got out.
No, he didn't just get out. He was, he'd been falsely prosecuted.
And he's still in prison?
Pardon?
He's still in prison?
Yeah. From what I understand.
Yeah, yeah. Those were, I believe, old defectors from NLA that had a whole debacle and tried to sway NLA one way or the other. And, I'd advise stay way clear of those people because they're all going to end up in prison. They're all going to end up in prison the way they're doing it.
Oh, okay. All righty.
What I'm saying to you is there was someone reported on the from California. It may, and I don't know if anybody knows Mickey from Minnesota. She has the information that had nothing to do with Doucette or anything, just like I don't have anything to do with this particular. I just have the number here. Somehow I got the number, and I didn't have anything to do tonight, so I thought I'd give a call, and here I am. But this supposedly has nothing to do with Doucette and the guys that are in prison. You think they were lawfully prosecuted?
Sir, they took law into their own hands and created their own shadow government.
Yeah.
Well, the government, the entity that we think of as government right now is a de facto organization. I thought that's what we were, you know, that was part of our...
Yeah, well, two wrongs don't make a right, so...
And if you follow their course, you'll end up in prison just like they are.
Okay, that's not what I'm telling you, okay? And if I had, it has nothing to do with them. There is supposedly a judge in California that is listening to this stuff that we now know about mortgages and things like that, and is actually prosecuting bankers for fraudulent loans or something to that effect. I just say, I can give you the number for the call tomorrow night. And
what time is it on tomorrow night?
And inquire. See what?
Yeah. What is the number?
Okay, hold on here. Because it has nothing to do with those guys. But when the government is a criminal, you can't prosecute. They can't even prosecute serial killers. They have no jurisdiction. So whether Doucette and those guys
but the ironic thing today, what happened with me in the court, because
yeah.
See, Monday, I mean, there's like about 400 foreclosures a week in our state. And Connecticut is like the new California, and they're taking everyone's home. So as I said, when they let me speak, and I said, by the way, I said, who is the injured party? You know, I said,
yeah.
I am the injured party. What did you have to lose? What did you contribute to my property? I said, and all these children and families that you are breaking up, and then they ended up in the shelters, which I'm very active in the community, and then they said that the parents are having breakdowns in the shelters, and then they're taking the kids and putting them in foster care, and they're
yeah.
being abused there, and you're paying them $4,000 instead of leaving the people alone. You are causing terrorist attacks on the children's lives. Use attorneys. And we got 38,000 attorneys in Connecticut, and we're the third smallest state in the United States.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, did you ask for this number on the for this call tomorrow night?
Yes, I did.
Once again, they don't even... I'm very disappointed in the call. But when you come on... Just tell them Santa Claus suggested that you get some information on this court in California that is criminally prosecuting, from what I understand. I wish I could tell you more, but I can't. I could find out more, but same way you could, all right? And then I'd have to wait till next
time. I just want to know a little bit more about these banks and all this. Because,
yeah.
as a matter of fact, I know GE is under big-time investigation, and they're the ones who are trying to swindle me. And I mean, their name, after my house was paid for, 3 years later, these attorneys put their names on my property. And I said, and by the way, there's two different dates on there, volume and page. And see, this attorney had the audacity. He put it on, they put their names December 7th, 2013, 2014, and then they recorded, they put GE's name on my property December 13, 2014. Then they put a foreclosure, and then the attorney said, well, if you give me $7,000 in cash by December 1st before 12 o'clock, I'll make you go away. And come to find out, all the people that's been going to the courts, because we've been court observers, this has been happening to quite a few people. The attorneys are getting $7,000, $15,000, $50,000. And now they're taking the people's money, and now they're saying that the people didn't pay. So, I mean, there's so much of a mess going on. I guess it's going on all over. But
yeah.
it's good because it's the same people, and everybody's starting to talk in court now.
Yeah. yeah. Okay, here. Now, you wanted the number?
Yes, please.
Okay, 712.
Mm-hmm.
770
Mm-hmm.
4160.
Okay.
And the access code is 665599 pound.
And what time is this call on?
Well, I'm in Cincinnati, and it'll be on at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
Okay, so yeah, you're Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, we're the same time, I believe.
And
it's 10:13 where you are.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a recall number?
For the call, that a number I just gave you?
Yes.
Yeah, they make recordings. No, I don't know. But I just want to reiterate, it has this information about this judge prosecuting bankers in California was just information brought on the call. It had nothing to do with the Doucette and those people. It's just, it's like this call. I'm on this call because it's interesting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And and I'll ask tomorrow if I'm still around. I'm an old guy, you know. And,
what time is the call? At 9?
Well, it's 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
Okay, all righty.
You're in Connecticut?
I mean Eastern Daylight Time.
Well, okay, Eastern. Well, I don't know.
It's 10 in the morning?
No, tomorrow
in the evening.
Oh, okay.
9 o'clock our time, Crystal.
Yeah, they're not going to
okay,
try
that's
to join anything. It's just the information, you know. Okay,
yeah.
I yield.
We're at a good closing time here. We're about 15 minutes over. I just wanted to add one comment about the previous discussions we had on the indigenous peoples. When the European settlers decided to invade this country, according to what I've read, there were about 90 million indigenous peoples in South America, Central America, and North America. And by the time they got done with all of the shenanigans from the Europeans and so on, they're down to about 3 million. Now, that's pretty close to a mass extinction. So I'll leave that thought with you for the evening, and we hope to see you back again here next week, same time, 9 o'clock. And I'll turn the recording.